Welcome to the 17th episode of Chatter for Change. My name is Ryan Warford. Today here we have Tyler Kuykendall and Gabriel Gonzalez here. And then we're lucky to have the Police Chief of Providence, Todd Jones, with us today. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing awesome. Thanks for having me. I'm enjoying this already.
Well, it should be some good conversation today. And Gabriel, do you have anything to start us off with?
Well, I'm just going to say I'm happy that we're back. We took a week off last week because at least three of us here were on spring break. So did you guys did you do anything interesting spring break?
Yeah. I went on a little weekend trip and rode dirt bikes and camped, so that was fun.
Ryan?
I just had a full week of tennis practice and hung out at home and enjoyed the good weather that we had.
Yeah, I was doing pretty much the same. I didn't do anything special. I didn't go to Florida or any beach or anything like that. Yeah. Just stayed home, you know?
Yep.
As you do. So I guess getting into the interview, so if we heard correctly, so how long have you been, I guess, a police officer or a police chief?
I've been in law enforcement for 33 years. I've been with Providence a little over 2 years. Started my career in 1988 with the Kentucky State Police. Spent almost 25 years in the Kentucky State Police. Retired from there. Went to the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife, where I was a game warden, and spent 7 years there. So that's kind of a short synopsis of my career.
Wow. So you said that 33 years, you said?
Yeah, I think if you add that up, it's a little more than 33, but
gotcha.
I'm trying to shorten my age so I don't show my age.
So I guess, what did you do as the part of the Kentucky State Police?
I started my career as a road trooper like everyone else does. In 1996, I was promoted to sergeant. I was a squad sergeant where I supervised anywhere from 12 to 18 men at a time. From there, I became a supervisor over Post 2 in Madisonville, over the fleet and evidence custodian.
Gotcha.
From there, I was transferred to narcotics, where I worked for Drug Enforcement Special Investigations West as a supervisor for my last 6 years. And we did narcotics all over the state, as well as out of state. We worked with federal authorities as well.
So you were able to go out of the state and I guess still...
I'm sorry?
So you did go out of the state, I guess, as a part of the narcotics division?
We did. With drug enforcement officers, we worked parallel with the drug enforcement agency, and we were actually under certain cases they would swear us in, and we had authority to go with them, and we would track drug loads from Mexico into Atlanta and back up into Kentucky. We did a variety of things like that when we knew that the original destination was eventually going to wind up in the Commonwealth.
Wow. So how long did these trips do you think would take? Like, I guess, on any given, I guess, call?
Some of them were, and my wife will tell you, I spent a lot of time away from home. Some of them were short. Some of them would require motel stays. And we would have to rent different motel rooms. We used, there's a lot in this day and age, as you guys very well know, with cell phones and everything else, we have a whole host of mechanisms and a way to track people. The only thing is, in the criminal world and being law enforcement, we have to have court orders and search warrants in order to do those. So there's a whole lot of paperwork that precedes all the fun, so to speak. I mean, we all look at that and think, well, police work's fun to go out here and arrest the bad guys. Right. They don't see the side of it where all the preparation and all the paperwork before we do it.
To make sure everything's like in order before you can...
Absolutely. You want a good, solid case that's going to ultimately stand up in court. You want that conviction. You want to get the bad guy.
Wow.
So out of all the titles that you've held in the past, what is your favorite period like? You said you were like just a regular trooper, and then you were a sergeant, and then the drug enforcement, whatever. And now you hold the police chief in Providence. So out of all your titles, what has been your favorite time as a police officer, I guess?
First thing you made me think of there, my favorite title is being father, husband, and deacon.
Yeah.
So it's God and family comes first. And that's what makes me the person I am today. So, but to answer your question, I think you were more talking about law enforcement. I honestly, the day I graduated from Kentucky State Police Academy, and I was a Kentucky State Trooper, I was probably more proud of that than I've ever been in my life, because it's not easily earned. You work hard for it. I worked hard to go to college. I spent a lot of time in college, a lot of preparation, jogging 10 miles a day every day to try to prepare myself for that rigorous training. Wow. And to graduate that and to actually succeed at a goal I'd set for myself early in life was something I was very proud of.
That's awesome. That's awesome, yeah.
So, as you know, us as a group, we work to stop drug, alcohol, and tobacco abuse in the community, and also character. You see character for change on our little logo. So, as a police officer, you see a totally different side than we do. You're going and, you know, chasing the bad guys and arresting them and finding, you know, where the problems are actually happening. Whereas we're going and say to rallies or setting up a tent or whatever and spreading awareness, that type of thing. So kind of tell us, you know, just about the history of drug abuse in our region or county. How has it changed, you know, the biggest problems, that sort of thing.
I'll start with change to answer your question. From the 80s to the present, the change is overwhelming. From society's perception of drugs, used to it was a big misnomer. You know, if you did drugs, it was more secretive. It was not socially acceptable to go out here and use methamphetamine or to abuse prescription medication or in high school to rob your mom and dad's medicine cabinet and come and have parties and stuff. Alcohol abuse was something I observed when I was first into law enforcement, marijuana to some extent. You know, obviously there was still cocaine and crack cocaine and stuff. But society's perception, and if we caught somebody back then, the courts prosecuted them. It was very hard on them. So there was ultimate punishment for your actions. That has now, as the drug epidemic has increased and gotten out of hand, it seems like our society is more, okay, it's a disease. Let's just don't penalize it criminally and let's let it go. It is a disease. And the same people I encounter on the streets, the same people I arrest, are the same people you interact with, whether you believe it or not. It's the same people you're trying to plant that seed in as well. They're struggling. They are addicts, a lot of them. Some of them are dealers and they need to be locked up. But a lot of them are good, honest people that are addicts. And I've actually went to people's doors and pleaded with them, hey, I know what you're doing. I've got enough to do a search warrant on your house now. No police officer in the state would probably tell you this, but I'm asking you to get clean. Here's an avenue, and I will give them some resources to call and some people to get in touch with. I can get you a treatment facility usually within 24 hours. And please take advantage of this so I don't have to arrest you. Overwhelmingly, a few of them have actually accepted that help, and a lot of them have not. And just about all that didn't are ones that I incarcerated, and they ended up being their names on the front page of the paper. They're on our Facebook page because I want the kids in school to know that if I go and pursue that path, that's what's going to happen to me. And I don't want that because I ruined my name. You ruin your mom and daddy's name. You ruin your family. You let everybody down when you do something like that. So accept the help that's being offered. What you're doing, your addiction, it's a disease. It's treatable if you will allow it to be treated. That's something we're approaching from a totally different angle now as opposed to back then. And but if you don't, then I want to separate you from the society of the people that do want help. So it this quote unquote disease doesn't spread.
Why do you think that people refuse the help if they're in this addiction and their life is probably on a downward spiral most of the time? But like, why do you think they refuse this help that you're offering them or other people are offering?
I try to get as much insight from people as I can when I arrest them, And the addiction is overwhelming. Us sitting in this room that have not faced anything like that don't understand what addiction, how it consumes your mind and your body.
Yeah.
And as I take people to jail, I oftentimes will talk to them about their addiction. And they tell me how it started out. And it started out small, and then they stole from their parents. You lose that faith of your parents, the trust. So eventually your parents don't want anything to do with you. So you go out here in public and you commit petty larceny and shoplifting and small crimes to feed your addiction. And it consumes you. And they would tell me in jail, it got to the point to where as soon as they wake up in the morning, the first thing on their mind is, do I have any dope where I can get high today? If I don't, who can I get money from? Who can I beg money from, steal from? Or where can I go steal something to sell or pawn to get money for drugs? Once they establish that and they've got resource to get drugs, and some of them will sell their bodies, then they go get that drug, get high, stay high as long as they can, stay up for 2 or 3 days. Once they crash, they wake up and repeat the cycle, and it consumes their life. So it's hard to break that. And they're embarrassed. They know where they were when they were kids and where they are now, and they're embarrassed to admit it, and they're embarrassed to say, I'm on rock bottom. I'm homeless. I've got to have some help.
Wow. So I guess there's a lot more to it than rather than just, I guess, just seeing the notes as this person, you know, has drugs or deals drugs. There's a lot more depth, I guess, to a person.
It is, and that's one of the big benefits of us all being in a small rural community in a rural town. We all know each other, and it doesn't take long for me to learn every single person that's in Providence. And by doing that, I pretty well know who the drug dealers are. I know who the people that are buying drugs regularly. And I hope people that have addiction problems or drug dealers are listening to this podcast, because I know who they are, and I'm watching them every day. So, and my officers are too.
Gotcha. And I guess one thing that you stated earlier that I thought was really interesting, so that whenever we asked you, I guess, about your favorite time period, or I guess your favorite period, instead of going to your job, you said your role, I guess, as a father and as a deacon. So, could you care to explain? So what, I guess, do you think defines you? So what makes being a father, I guess, important into your life more than, I guess, your job?
My two children and my family is what defines me. That my job doesn't define me. Everybody, my goal in life, once I had two little boys, JT and Clayton, they're 28, 22 now, and Clayton, my youngest, is a state trooper, so he's following along that same path. My thing was, when they were young, everybody would say, hey, your dad's a state trooper. Your dad's Todd Jones. I knew that I'd done a good job as a father that my wife and I had as parents whenever my kids succeeded to the point that people would come to us and said, oh, your son is JT Jones. You're who? You're Christine and Todd? Oh, y'all are the parents of JT and Clayton. So now we get recognition on the character and that they have, and their name, their good name, and what they have done. It makes me proud. So that's probably the proudest thing I've got.
Gotcha. Sorry, go ahead.
So I don't know if you'll be able to answer this the best, because you've dealt mostly around here, but how would you say the drug epidemic and alcohol abuse and such stacks up here against the rest of the country? Is it good? Is it bad?
We're blessed. And I have dealt with it all over when I was with Desi. We traveled from Texas to Atlanta to a variety of different cities. I've been to Las Vegas and everything else, and while I worked with drug enforcement. We are blessed. We have our problems. We have overdoses. We have people that dies. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Because of the drug epidemic, we have families that are suffering. We have small children that are suffering. We, as a small rural community, have the ability to help our people. The drug epidemic in big cities, you can go under any overpass in Louisville, Kentucky, and you'll see anywhere from 20 to 50 people under that overpass. My son used to work in a homeless shelter. There's plenty of shelter for those people. they will not go, because if you go to a homeless shelter, you cannot use or partake in illegal narcotics or drink alcohol. So they would rather stay out under them overpasses and shoot up drugs. There's syringes laying everywhere. We're blessed. We don't have it to that magnitude.
Wow. So I was just going to say, so whenever you're talking about, I guess, being, or I guess they would rather choose to be in those overpasses, and they would rather choose, like you said earlier, to continue, I guess, doing drugs until the point where you send them to jail. Do you think it, there would be any benefit to, I guess, maybe like a government-issued, I guess, rehab that they could go to, maybe instead of being incarcerated? Or do you think at that point, since they chose to, I guess, continue down that path, that they should be in jail?
That's a very good question. And I mentioned what I was proud of, and one of those things was a deacon. So I'm extreme believer that if it's not faith-based recovery, it doesn't work. And I can cite examples of that, but I'm not going to. We don't have enough time on this podcast. But if we don't have a level of spiritual belief within us, whether you're a Christian and you believe that Christ is the Son of God and he's keeping tabs on you, or whether you believe in something else, you got to have something to be held accountable for in life. Whether when we're young, it's our mom and dad, or it should be. Our family unit has broke down. That's another part of the problem. But we have to be held accountable. These guys, my officers stand behind me, are held accountable by me. I'm held accountable by the mayor. And but I also, and we also have a level of accountability because we believe in a higher power, and we don't want to go past that. We honor that.
Gotcha. So I guess instead of maybe having a, I guess, a state-regulated one, it'd be best to, on your own, be accountable for yourself and trust in God to help you through that.
I totally agree. The government keeps regulating on top of regulating, and it hasn't succeeded in the past. Mm-hmm. So future behavior is usually indicative of past behavior.
Gotcha. And so I guess switching paces, what is a big change that you've seen, I guess, or what do you think is a good thing that we can do to change, I guess, the way we attack on drugs? Do you think there's a different path that we could take? Or do you think, do you see what I'm saying?
Like, is there a different way that we could approach, like, what we're doing here? Like, is there anything more that we could do to, like, spread awareness? Or is there a gap in there that we could focus more on to spread awareness, or, you know?
I don't know everything that you're doing, but just walking in here today, I wasn't aware of you were doing this. So, I mean, this is amazing. Once addiction takes over and consumes your body, we will never give up on those people. But the odds of them for long-term success is very, very remote. So the way to truly get rid of drugs is to change the next generation. You guys are that next generation. You guys have the ability to influence so many more people than I ever could. So just prevent them from taking that first step and starting. And you guys can spread that message. You can preach that message a whole lot better than I ever could, because they look at me as the old man, the old cop that's going to lock everybody up, and there's a sense of fear and everything else. You guys, they respect, and y'all can do a lot more than I can. And by using social media, by using this platform, this is the way to get it out. Back in my day, we didn't. We had to yell it from our rooftops or go to the school and stand up in a gym and talk to people.
Yeah.
I guess
we gonna ask them questions too.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you want to, you guys want to sit down.
Yeah, I've got two officers with me. It's Eric Elder and Jay Edwards.
Right, so there's two others, I guess, for those that are listening. Two other deputies that came in, and that we also wanted to ask questions. So I guess I'll hand it off over to Tyler to ask these questions.
Yeah, so as y'all are getting arranged here, we kind of we asked Todd, you know, about his career and where he started off and how he got in the position he's at. So if y'all don't care, just say, you know, if y'all's career as a policeman and, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, I actually grew up across the street from Todd.
Okay.
So I've known him since I was a kid. Always respected him. He used to come down to the basement, run 10 miles a day. I mean, he worked hard. He was always a family man. And seeing that, that's what I grew up seeing, cops, treat people. And it was just the level of respect I had for him growing up was awesome. I went to the mines when I got out of high school. I didn't take that path. And then I wanted to help people. I seen drugs taking over families, alcohol. It was a mess. Took over a couple people in my family. And I made the decision to follow in the path that he did. I called him up one day. I said, you got a spot open. He said, you're the man I want. He knew me from my kid. He knew what I stood for. I'm a big family man now. I got two kids of my own. And I just want to put my stamp on it.
Awesome.
That is awesome. Eric?
I guess my start's a little different. I didn't really have any other career that interested me starting out. When I was in high school, I don't even know if it's a thing anymore, but I was in Yes Youth Council with Donna Bumpus, and it did a lot of proactive stuff. Is it even a thing anymore?
Yeah, it's still going.
I don't know, that was a while ago. I graduated Western County in 13, so I know things changed kind of quick. But I started in public service in 2014. I started volunteering at the Clay Fire Department. Got my EMT while I was in college studying criminal justice. Started working part-time as a 911 dispatcher in the city of Providence. Got finished with my EMT, and then I started dispatching along with working fire EMS for the city of Providence. I did a little bit of this, a little bit of that in between. And then finally got to the point, last year before COVID was really a big thing of trying to apply with the city of Providence, to change over to the side of the police department. So it's been, I've kind of gotten to go into each facet of public service, and I guess it's just been a calling altogether. I worked at the detention center for 2 years prior to this. So I've kind of gotten a unique view, I think, into what you all have been hitting on a little bit with the drug epidemic. I've seen both from the overdose side to the hospital side to the jail side and now the street side of it. So I think I've gotten to have a little bit of a unique view in it. So I think it's affected the way I've started to police. That's become some of the crimes that stem from drug use are usually worse than the use of the drug itself, which using drugs is a crime. But because you have to feed your addiction, that drive to get high is so strong, you're willing to steal from your own mother. You're pawn her jewelry that was supposed to be family heirlooms just so you can get a few hundred dollars to buy meth to get you high for another 3 nights. So what addiction really drives you to do changes you as a person. And a lot of people don't get to recover from that and come back. You know, not all addicts are bad people. Most every household, and I would put money on it, knows an addict, has dealt with an addict. And not all addicts are what they show on the street. You know, the guy's picking bugs on his skin, you know, the way the movies really overdo it sometimes. Not that there's not those extremes in the world, but some people are, you know, from good, prominent families, even in this area, that are struggling with addiction. It may not be street level, you know, illegal narcotics or methamphetamine. It may just be something as simple as prescription medications. There's a lot of people that have started with things like sleep medications, Ambien, Zoloft, not Zoloft, I'm sorry, Ambien, Lunesta, had surgeries where they've been on oxycodone, Oxycontin. And a lot of people will have the pain, and because their bodies become dependent on it, they feel like they really do need the medication. They really do feel like real pain. And part of that is the addiction and the body needing that drug. But I mean, there's good people that, run to bad places to feed their addictions. You know, they may only get 30 days supply of that medication. They may use that 30 days in 2 weeks. And then they have to resort to either taking away from their families financially, theft, just a number of compounding crimes, I guess you could say, from the drug use.
Yeah, that's something that hits kind of home because both my parents are pharmacists, and getting able to work in the pharmacy the past couple months, I've really been able to see people come in and just the desperation, and like if they can't, they'll be out of refills or they'll be out of whatever, and they'll get tearing up, you know, crying and like, how am I gonna, you know, get this, continue this high that I'm gonna get, and it's really sad. And now being able to work there and see in the past, like I've heard my parents talk about it, and but being able to work there has really opened my eyes to just how much of a problem it is in our community. So that's something that really hits home. So y'all are fairly new to the police force, I'm guessing. I know you are, but
yeah, we started the same day.
Okay. So
fairly green.
What challenges do y'all face being young in the force?
More or less millennial policing.
Yeah.
It is different. If you watch the news, it does not scream, hey, come choose this career, you're going to have all the support you ever wanted. It doesn't say, you know, come down here, serve your community, you'll always be in open arms. It's, you know, this is the bad person, this is the one that's going to do this, do that. You know, what you're seeing in the mainstream media from this issue in this larger city is what you're going to have in a 14,000 population police force, where, you know, there's an old saying, bad gas travels fast in a small town.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I go out and I pull over your parents and I don't do anything but talk disrespectfully to them, how many people are you going to hear about that?
A lot.
Your mom's probably going to call your dad first thing, right?
Yeah.
Then you're going to hear about it. Then this one, that one, and then everyone hears about how badly you treated a person. So you have to approach things in a manner where you have to remember that, number one, you're always in the public eye, but you got to pretend like that's your mother in there. Is that the way you want someone talking to them? So, you know, doing that, and then this, a younger generation that's kind of being instilled that the police is the bad person. It's in all the media, the news, commercials, social media. It's everywhere you look. And that is been a small hurdle that I've noticed. There's a lot of much, much younger kids that will not approach you, that will turn away and run. It's just things that have been instilled in the household and through media. So sometimes it can be hard to connect to youth and just kind of bridge that gap. Like yesterday, we went to the Providence Elementary School, taught them about something simple, counterfeit money, how our bills are protected and things like that, as fourth graders. But, you know, sometimes that's hard to get into, especially now with COVID, but now that's kind of dwindling away. Todd's always been big about being in the school, being seen, talking to kids, and trying to combat, you know, that the uniform is not the person. You know, if you've had a bad experience, that doesn't mean you're going to have a bad experience continually. You know, there are bad people, and there's people that should never have put on the uniform, but one bad apple can't ruin the whole crop.
Yeah.
So you need to be the difference you wish to see in the world.
And I think that's what drives me, is I've got two little kids of my own, and I want them to grow up being able to approach cops, questions for anything.
Yeah.
And that's what we try to do now, especially with Chief's help. You know, he's all about kids getting into school and making sure we're approachable.
Yeah.
And like I said, having kids of my own, I want them to grow up and not be afraid of us. I want them to tell their kids not to be afraid. They're friends. You know, my dad's a cop. This is what they did today. She was begging me to go to her school. From where we went to Providence, she goes to Dixon. She said, "Daddy, why don't you come to my school? Why don't you come to my school?" And that's what they want. That's what they need.
Yeah, and I think that's what a lot of like the mainstream media and all that, they fail to see is what y'all do for like the community, like, or not even the community, just like going to schools and just those interactions. We miss that. And no matter what everything says, there's a group of people out there that will always respect what y'all do, and will always be grateful for y'all's service.
Absolutely. So you said you were part of the youth council when you were in high school. So you've kind of seen what we see now. And the youth council, by the way, is just a group at the high school that tries to reach out to stop drug, alcohol, and tobacco abuse. So going from being in high school and being in the youth council and doing all that stuff, you know, reaching out, and then transferring into your job, which was helping with fire department and now a police officer, you know, how did that open your eyes to see things that you weren't able to see just reaching out from that group?
I would say so. The real world different than everything you ever try to teach anybody. And in all honesty, you know, you have to have a curriculum or an agenda that kind of fits a general span. But, you know, they can show you all the slides, the pictures, the stats and everything. But until you see someone that's just overcome with addiction, you know, they've no power, no water, you know, using a bucket for the facilities in their home, and they're happy to live like that so long as they are able to get their high. You can't show that in an assembly and have people understand it. They think you're, you know, blown out of proportion when it's like that. There's places like that. There's people like that in this county that are choosing to live like that because they have to feed their addiction. You know, the comforts of life are outweighed by the drive of the addiction. So, you know, the information gets out there and it's good and it's a good start. But the curiosity sometimes outweighs, what you already know. You know, everybody knows your basic facts about heroin and methamphetamine and marijuana and social drinking, binge drinking, you know, stuff like that. But then you get out in public and you get out with friends and things and start to experiment. And that's kind of where you get down the road you don't need to be on. But unfortunately, a lot of people, you know, I can tell you the pot is hot, but until you burn yourself, you're not going to understand. And some people, that's the way they learn. And unfortunately, sometimes they don't get to recover from that experience. And they learn the lesson the hard way if they get to recover. You know, a lot of people are good people and they end up making mistakes. They commit burglary, which puts them into prison because they need to feed their addiction. And then it's very hard for them to recover. You know, there are systems out there to help felons and people that have made the mistakes. And if someone's trying to make a conscious change in their life, you know, I think they should be given all the opportunities available to them. But once you start having that sort of thing on your record, it's very hard to find jobs that require background checks and good paying jobs, because they will continue to hammer on your past because of their liabilities, their insurance. A lot of insurance companies won't allow people that have had history issues like that because they're in high risk positions. So, you know, you got to think about too, what you're doing now, stuff you're doing now in high school. You think about, you know, no one's going to remember that. No one's going to come back and remember when I did a keg stand and smoked up three joints. But people remember that And there's a lot of people that end up you going to school with, or their parents that you're then trying to get jobs from, and they've already heard the stories of what you were doing. And you kind of get blackballed in that way. I'm not saying that that's right, but, you know, your actions are always looked upon. The old saying my mom used to say was, you're always interviewing for your next job. So, you know, kind of you have to be conscious of your actions, and you're the one that has to answer to them. You can't blame everybody for your mistakes. You got to own up to them.
Yeah. So, you got any questions, Tyler?
Yeah, and you said out of high school you went to the mines, and
yeah, I was gonna after him. Okay. You know, he kind of worked his way into policing.
Right.
You know, he's seen the jail side of it. You know, the repercussions of the crime.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked EMS also, so he's also seen what it can do to people. I didn't get that.
Right.
I was a family man, still am, but, you know, I was underground. I just knew what I was taught in school and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. when I become a police officer, I seen it firsthand of what it does and how crazy it is.
Right.
And it is wild. And you don't understand until you see it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just been the biggest surprise to me, because I came in blind.
Right.
You know, unlike him, where he kind of worked his way into it, I didn't know what I was expecting. And it's a problem that needs to be fixed.
Right. And that's what I was going to ask you, because, you know, after high school, you went to the mines, and you said one of the biggest reasons that you went into the police force was because you saw, you know, just from the outside what alcohol and drugs had done to your family and other people and other families. And so you had to go in, and, you know, like you said, it had to be a surprise.
Which, you know, like you said, we're both kind of green still. And
right.
We didn't come in at the best time,
mm-hmm.
you know, with everything going on in the world. And everybody would always ask me, why do you want to be a cop? Why do you want to be a cop? Somebody's got to do it. And I feel if your head and your heart's in the right place, you'll be fit for that job. And that's, I made the decision to do it, and I ain't looked back yet.
Okay. Yeah.
Just got to block out the haters.
Yeah.
More or less. But.
All right. Well, it's been an awesome podcast. We appreciate you guys coming in and giving your insight and answering the questions. Y'all have been great guests. We appreciate it. Anything y'all want to say before we wrap it up?
Hey, we appreciate the opportunity. Anytime we can have a platform to spread the word and to let people know that there are answers and there are help available to them, then that's just, I'm going to take it. Every time you ask me to do something like this, I'm going to take it to try to help someone. So thank y'all very much, and thank you for what you do.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Yep. Anyways, thanks for listening, guys. Be sure to listen to the next one, and we'll see you.